On this week's 51%, we dive into the fascinating theory of cycle syncing with athlete and fertility doula Angie Marie. In her new guide, The Cycle Syncing Handbook, Marie lays out how you can get more in touch with your menstrual cycle and use it to your advantage.
It's just being mindful of my period, and instead of seeing it as a curse, seeing it as one tool in my wellness toolbox to feel my best.
WAMC's Samantha Simmons also takes us to a roundtable for reproductive health advocates. I'm Jesse King. It's all up next on 51%.
I was standing around like one of those girls I had seen in a movie. The whole world was a movie back then. I had my sunglasses on. I wanted to be seen without seeing Shiloh or Lita. I wasn't really in it. I didn't really get it.
You're listening to 51%, a WAMC production dedicated to women's issues and experiences. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jesse King. Today's episode is all about feeling more in tune with our bodies. Do you ever feel like you're a prisoner of your menstrual cycle? It's a stereotype that I don't really care for, but sometimes it really does feel like I've got a world of responsibilities on my plate, and all I physically want to do is curl up in a ball and wallow. The society we've built does not particularly care about a woman's periods, so we're taught to push through it and be consistently productive and cheerful every day of the month. But there are some women who argue that we shouldn't have to, that the best way to be free from your menstrual cycle is to actually embrace it. It's called cycle syncing, and it's become especially trendy in recent years, particularly among athletes hoping to optimize their workouts by aligning them to their hormone levels. For the record, the scientific research on whether cycle syncing really enhances performance is pretty inconsistent so far. As we learned from Dr. Elizabeth Komen last week, there isn't a whole lot of funding going into researching women's health in the first place. But cycle syncing is also not easy to study, as few people are likely measuring their hormone levels every single day. And importantly, every woman's menstrual cycle is a little different. Nevertheless, there are some women who swear by this, and there's no denying that a woman's menstrual cycle plays a crucial role in her overall health, even when it ends. Our guest today has been taking some of the main ideas behind cycle syncing and applying them to her everyday life. Angie Marie is an endurance runner, mountain athlete, and a trained birth and fertility doula. She's passionate about helping women feel more in tune with their bodies and the outdoors. And personally, she says she's done that through cycle syncing. Every day, Marie tracks how she's feeling emotionally and physically in order to get a better sense of her own cycle. Instead of fighting it, she flows with it. Her new guide for others hoping to do the same is the Cycle Syncing Handbook. Identify hormonal patterns, build holistic habits, and embrace the power of your menstrual cycle.
If you had asked me 10 years ago if I would ever write a book about menstrual cycles and periods, I would have laughed in your face. It's such a taboo topic, and it is nothing I ever felt connected with in my youth, in my adolescence. I grew up thinking that my period was something to hide, something to neglect, something to suppress. I wasn't interested at all in paying attention to my menstrual cycle until I was faced with a life-threatening experience. I had a copper IUD for birth control all through college. It gave me some side effects that weren't pleasant. I had much heavier periods and pretty painful cramps, which I had never had before without birth control. But I thought that's the price that you pay. And I just pushed through it. My IUD worked and I actually liked it despite those side effects until one winter's week when I started getting really weird symptoms. I was having blood in the toilet, really sharp stabbing knife pains in my pelvis. I kept on trying to tell myself, well, maybe this is normal. Doesn't health class teach you that cramps are normal, that spotting is normal? Side note that those are not always normal. So I did push through the pain for about 5 days before I went to seek additional help. It turns out that I had an ectopic pregnancy. An ectopic pregnancy is when a pregnancy occurs outside of the womb, outside of your uterus. This is a very dangerous situation, and it's a leading cause of death related to pregnancy. At 24 years old, they ended up removing my fallopian tube because I had so much internal bleeding and a ruptured tube from that experience of having a pregnancy with an IUD in. That gave me a lot of anxiety around my body in the healing process. What actually ended up making me heal that anxiety and feel more connected to my body than ever before was learning about the cycle. I wanted to know, why did this happen? What went wrong? what is normal period anyway? What are the myths that we've been led to believe that aren't really serving me and my connection to my body? Next thing you know, I was reading everything I could about periods, your reproductive system, even pregnancy and birth. I got so fascinated with this information that I started to pursue it in my work. I trained to be a birth doula and a fertility doula, although I never actually used that for work. What I really found myself gravitated to was teaching about the menstrual cycle, what actually happens throughout a whole cycle, because it's not just your period. It's not just bleeding. I then started to get really passionate about how we can use our cycles as a framework for more creativity, more energy, more collaboration with other people. I do that by paralleling the phases hormonally of the cycle to a different season in nature. And for me, this has been an amazing way to overlap my two passions of menstrual cycles and time in nature. And I have worked with tons of menstruators who have found benefits from doing that exact thing.
Well, I think maybe the best place to start is, you know, what exactly is happening during our menstrual cycles? You know, what are the different phases?
All of this is hormonally driven. Your menstrual cycle is just that. It's a cycle of hormones, an ebb and flow of hormones over the course of 25 to 35 days if you have a healthy cycle. The big myth here is that your period is the main event of this cycle. That is not true. The main event of your menstrual cycle is ovulation. Ovulation is the release of an egg from your ovary, and it's super healthy. Ovulating regularly helps you have nice skin. It helps you have more energy. It helps you get pregnant if that's something that you actually want. And so if you're of reproductive age, you really want to be making sure that you're ovulating. That is the big dividing line of your cycle. The time before ovulation, so the start of your period, the first day of full flow bleeding, all the way up to your ovulation, that is called the follicular phase. It's called the follicular phase because it's when your egg follicles are growing. So even while you're on your period, you're already gearing up for that next ovulation. Your follicles are growing. Your estrogen hormone is rising. As you approach ovulation, you might feel a lot more energetic, maybe more extroverted. You're able to take on more duties without feeling as much overwhelmed. Then you ovulate. You release your egg for the cycle. As soon as you ovulate, you enter the luteal phase. The luteal phase is named after the corpus luteum, which is a small mini temporary organ that grows on your ovary. This little organ would eventually turn into a baby's placenta if you do become pregnant. If you don't become pregnant, that cycle, it collapses in on itself, it disintegrates, and you get another period. So this luteal phase is the time between ovulation and the start of your next period. This is when the hormone progesterone is more dominant than estrogen. Progesterone might make you feel a little bit more likely to stay at home, a little bit calmer. When your hormones are in balance, it can give you a more calming, grounding energy. And maybe you start to feel those nesting urges right before your period of, I want to stay at home and get everything set up so that when your period comes next, the cycle can start over afresh.
You mentioned that it's important to know whether you're regularly ovulating. And I guess, you know, aside from getting your period or getting pregnant, you know, how do you know that you are regularly ovulating and when ovulation has occurred?
Yeah. Ovulation is something that you can't know exactly the moment that it's happening unless you have an ultrasound machine next to you. But there are some visual and some feeling cues of that it is happening pretty close to this day. The most obvious one that you can see is actually your cervical fluid or your cervical mucus. Some people cringe at that word, but once you get to know your own cervical fluid, it's a little bit less scary. Cervical fluid is produced in your body, and it also occurs on a cyclical basis. As you are reaching that high fertility part of your cycle, which is as you're approaching ovulation and while you're ovulating, your cervical fluid is going to come through your cervix and through your vaginal canal. And in that high fertility time, it gets really clear and wet and stretchy. It can look like the texture of egg whites. After you ovulate, that fluid is going to dry up and become more gunky or thick or milky white instead of clear and stretchy. So if you see that pattern happen where Your cervical fluid starts building up and getting clearer and stretchier and more egg whitey. And then over the next few days, it starts drying up. That is a good sign that you likely just ovulated. Another way that you can confirm the ovulation has happened is by taking your basal body temperature. This is the lowest temperature that your body gets as you sleep overnight. When you combine that symptom of cervical fluid and that thermometer reading of your basal body temperature, you can graph that data if you learn how from a certified fertility awareness educator. And then you can figure out, okay, I probably ovulated within this time period. I now know when I'm no longer fertile for the rest of the cycle. And you can actually make really empowered reproductive choices around that data. People use this fertility awareness method of birth control to prevent pregnancy. They also use it to achieve pregnancy at a time that they would like to. So all of this is just data about your body. If you can start paying attention to when you're ovulating, then you can at least know, okay, I'm ovulating. This is healthy. This explains why I might feel a certain way or crave certain movement or crave certain social experiences. But you can also use that data, if you're charting it correctly, to know, okay, am I potentially fertile on any given day?
That's really interesting. You know, I do think it's important to note that if you're using fertility awareness methods as a form of birth control, you want to make sure that you are really aware of what's going on in your body. According to Planned Parenthood, at least, I think fertility awareness methods are effective anywhere from 77 to 98% of the time, depending on a number of factors. But you specifically say that, you know, you use awareness of where you are in your cycle to increase your creativity and productivity. And I'm really curious how so. Because, you know, the average job does not really allow for those ebbs and flows where you might be struggling with PMS or cramping or any of those things. You know, I got to be productive even when I'm not feeling especially productive. So how are you aligning your life to your cycle?
Well, you mentioned something interesting there of feeling unproductive. I think that's something that society gets wrong often is, what does productivity actually mean? Does it mean producing as much work as humanly possible and putting it out there as much as you can? Or does it mean choosing the right goals, coming up with the right method, executing on it, and then collecting data to make decisions for the next iteration? I think it's more of the latter. It's setting out to do what you actually intentionally choose to do, not just mindlessly throwing out as many tasks, as much work as you possibly can. Where the menstrual cycle comes in is noticing those energy fluctuations that happen over a menstrual cycle, and then finding the right work, the right tasks to be working on in each phase. In each phase of the menstrual cycle, you have things that come more easily to you. You also have more challenges that pop up in each phase, very specific challenges. As you're getting closer to your period, you start to feel sad. Well, that's a piece of data. If you can start collecting data on what is coming easily and what's coming more difficultly to you in each part of your cycle, then you can start making empowered choices around, okay, what should my schedule look like that day? What groceries should I stock up on for that week? When should I meet up with this friend who wants to get dinner? You'll know when you feel more social, more energetic, less energetic, more willing to go for a bike ride versus a run, more likely to give a presentation at work versus do some admin tasks behind your computer screen. All of this is data that you can track within truly about three menstrual cycles. If you take a couple minutes a day, even 1 minute a day, to write down a couple words that you noticed about your energy, you can look at that data over a few cycles and start to pick up your own energy patterns. The people I work with typically notice that their energies follow the same cycles as those of nature. I like to look at those phases of the menstrual cycle. Again, you have your follicular phase from your period up to ovulation, and then you have your luteal phase from ovulation to the start of your next period. If you divide that a little bit down further, you'll have your period. I call this your inner winter time. You'll have the time between your period and ovulation. I call that your inner spring. You'll have your time around ovulation, which is an inner summer. And then your premenstrual time, your PMS time, can be your inner autumn. Each of these seasons feels energetically different. A lot of people in their inner winter or during their period, they feel very inward focused, like a mini hibernation every month or every cycle. They feel more intuitive, maybe slowed down. They can think more intuitively. Ideas come to them instead of you going out to find the opportunities yourself. When you enter your inner spring, you might feel like energy is picking back up again, like you have newness and creativity and inspiration around you, sort of like a garden coming to life after your winter. As you enter that inner summer, you get to this peak bloom. Imagine a sunflower in your garden in full bloom. People are looking at you. You're visible, you're confident, you're radiant. And then, just like a sunflower starts to die after that summer into autumn, you start to enter this period of pruning back, of being a little bit less in front of the world, a little bit more inward focused again, until you get into that inner winter. So if you're looking at a creative project, like writing a book, maybe your inner winter is a time for you to just let inspiration come to you. You're jotting down ideas, but you're not really acting on anything yet. Once you enter that inner springtime, you can start writing out an outline, coming up with intentions, mapping out a project or your chapters or your book summary, whatever it is. When you enter that inner summer, that might be the time to put some work out in front of the world, get feedback, have interviews so you can figure out, what should I really be writing about? Maybe it's the time that you do the most writing. Maybe you write 0 words a day during your winter and then 2,000 words a day during your summer. When you enter that inner autumn time, that's a great time to edit. I love editing writing at this time. I love taking an analysis of projects. Which goals should I put aside that I don't actually need to work on anymore? Where can I tweak projects to make them more impactful? And the beauty of this is that each season leads into the next, and each one is necessary in order to make the others possible.
We're speaking with Angie Marie, author of The Cycle Syncing Handbook. Okay, so I want to know, you know, how do we take care of ourselves during that luteal phase or that inner fall? And how much stock do you really put into your emotions during that time? Because I feel like sometimes I'll feel really sad just before my period, and then once it's passed, it doesn't bother me at all. So I'm always caught in the situation where I'm like, am I really sad or am I just getting ready for my period?
Yeah, the premenstrual phase is not aligned with how society really wants us to act, right? Society typically wants us to be in that summer mode, that ovulation phase all the time, because that's when the garden is in full bloom, right? That's when all the colors are out there and you're in front of the world and you're high energy, producing all the time. The problem is, just like on Earth, you can't always be in that full summer bloom because you will burn out. You will extract so much from the earth that the soil can't regenerate its nutrients, right? There's always a downside to trying to stay in one season forever. So society still expects us to be on this 24/7 cycle of always being in max productivity during these hours, do the same thing day after day. That sets us up for some challenges during our inner autumn, that premenstrual phase. This is a time when some of your powers that can also come up as challenges are truth speaking. You just get a sharper tongue in this time, right? Those couple days before your period, you might say something that you're like, ooh, that came off a little bit harsh, but it's also true. I think of your inner autumn as a time to really prune back to, what am I actually feeling? What do I actually think about this? And of course, if you can find some mindfulness around how do I communicate this in a way that doesn't come off as really aggressive, that's really helpful. It can also be a really hard time because all of us have that inner critic, right? That voice in our head that says, ooh, why did you say that? You look bad today. Why can't you just do everything right? We all feel that at some point. It's just a lot more likely to come up during that misunderstood inner autumn premenstrual time. And if you can expect that and know, okay, maybe I'm going to have a harder body image day around this part of my month, or maybe I'm not going to feel as communicative. Maybe I don't feel as good with my words during the time that this presentation is scheduled. At least you know that, and then you can prepare for success by creating maybe more extra alone time before that presentation. Maybe you get to bed earlier because you know that sleep will make you feel better. Maybe you buy yourself a special treat just to bring your mood up a little bit during that time. As an athlete, I'm aware of this time as a lower energy phase. I might not feel like sprinting. I train for a lot of ultra marathons, and sometimes I have to do some speed workouts around that. I just don't have that pep in my step as much in my later inner autumn. I can prep for that by stocking up on nutritious foods that I know are good for my premenstrual phase. I can be really on top of hydrating and electrolytes and maybe even scheduling some workouts that won't feel as difficult for me during that time. And in the end, I know that I'm able to do my best at, say, running a marathon at any part of my cycle. I just need to have that grace and understanding of why I'm feeling that way. And of course, some of those tools that I can use to prepare so that I can do my best at any part of my cycle.
So this is all working with a natural cycle, but I'm assuming that this all changes if you're on birth control, right?
It can, depending on what type of birth control you're on. When I had my copper IUD, it actually didn't affect my cycle because it was a non-hormonal method. It was a copper IUD. But there are a handful of IUDs that use synthetic hormones to suppress your natural cycle, which means they're suppressing ovulation. Depending on the dosage of your birth control drugs and depending on your own personal body, since each of us reacts to different birth controls differently, you might completely shut down ovulation. So if you imagine your hormones graphed out on a little chart, if you have a totally natural cycle that's not influenced by hormonal birth control, you'll see a couple nice roller coaster curves of hormones, the key players there being estrogen and progesterone. If you're on a birth control that shuts down ovulation, suppresses it, you're going to just see a flat line of synthetic hormones instead of the roller coaster. When people get a bleed during that type of birth control, when ovulation is suppressed, they'll get it during those sugar pills. Say they're taking the pill as their form of birth control. When they take the sugar pills, that's when they get their bleed. That's not actually a true period. That's called a withdrawal bleed because the drugs have been withdrawn from your system and it triggers a shedding, a slight shedding of your uterus. It's not a true hormonally driven period that came after ovulation. In order to have a true period, you must have ovulated 10 to 16 days before that. So if you are on a form of birth control that's shutting down your period, you might not notice these same fluctuations, the same four inner seasons that flow every single cycle. But you might still notice some seasonal changes in maybe your 24-hour cycle. Maybe you feel like you're in an inner summer every morning, but then by the afternoon, you're feeling like you're in inner autumn. Maybe you feel it throughout the year. Maybe they're really aligned with the seasons of the year. We all have energy fluctuations and we all have our own patterns. If you're not having a true menstrual cycle and true ovulation, I encourage you to still find those patterns that exist for you and try to schedule your life around when it feels best to do every task.
Well, Angie, thanks so much for taking the time. Any other menstrual myths that you'd like to weigh in on for us?
I'll give you three common myths. Number one, period pain is normal. Period pain might be common, but it is not normal. If you have debilitating period pain, then there might be something going on hormonally. There might be something going on structurally, and you deserve to go get answers and go get help. It can be a long process, which is why I encourage everybody to be collecting this data. Even if you don't start collecting data around your energy fluctuations, collect data on your symptoms. When are you seeing blood? When are you seeing cervical fluid? When do you feel tired? When do you feel pain? Take all of that down into writing so that when you do go to a doctor, you have data that can expedite that diagnosis process and treatment process. Myth number two is that skipping periods is normal. Again, this might be a bit common, but it is not normal, nor is it healthy to skip periods. I myself was over-exercising and under-fueling for a couple years in college. That led me to miss my cycle for a year. Because, you know, your biology doesn't want you reproducing if you're not even feeding yourself enough. It'll shut down that part of your body first to make sure that you survive. My body was trying to protect me, and I wasn't giving my body what it needed to really, really thrive. Once I started skipping periods, I knew I had a problem, but it took a long time to get my cycle back. So if you are skipping periods, take a look. Are you fueling enough? Are you resting enough? Go to a doctor if you aren't getting cycles regularly. And myth number three is that you should feel the same exact way day after day of your cycle, of your month, of your life. We are not robots. Everything is connected to the menstrual cycle. Your metabolism, your brain, your immunity, your microbiome, even your digestion. You get more, slightly more constipated during that luteal phase. So much is linked to our menstrual cycle that, of course, we're not feeling the same person. We're not feeling like the same person day after day because our cycles, our hormones are changing day after day. I feel like four different people, slightly different people throughout my cycle because I'm winter Angie, I'm spring Angie, I'm summer Angie, and I'm autumn Angie. And by leaning into those changes, embracing the powers, expecting the challenges, figuring out how to move around those obstacles proactively, that's what makes me feel the most joyful, the most creative, and the least burnt out. And this is the number one tool that I use for my wellness, even if I'm not doing it perfectly, because I don't. It's just being mindful of my period. And instead of seeing it as a curse, seeing it as one tool in my wellness toolbox to feel my best.
Angie Marie is a birth and fertility doula, mountain athlete, and overall outdoor enthusiast who lays out her reasons for cycle syncing in her new guide, The Cycle Syncing Handbook, Identify Hormonal Patterns, Build Holistic Habits, and Embrace the Power of Your Menstrual Cycle. It's out now through Ulysses Press. To learn more about Angie and her story, you can go to her website, itsangiemarie.com. Angie, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much. Bye.
One quick story before we go. The Supreme Court recently heard oral arguments in a case that could determine the future of mifepristone, one of two drugs commonly used for medication abortions in the U.S. As we await a decision on that case this summer, New York Congressman Paul Tonko recently held a roundtable for local medical professionals and abortion rights advocates, hoping to preserve and in some cases restore reproductive health access. WAMC's Samantha Simmons has more.
The Democrat from the 20th District met with five advocates at his Albany office to discuss the ongoing attacks on reproductive freedom across the nation. It comes as the Supreme Court heard arguments in its first abortion case since conservative justices overturned the constitutional right to an abortion 2 years ago. In the current case, the mail delivery of mifepristone could be halted. A decision is expected in June. Tonko supports abortion as health care, saying preserving access to abortion medications gives people a safe and effective treatment to terminate pregnancy for a variety of reasons.
Bans on abortion hurt real people, especially those in marginalized communities.
Corrine McLeod is the upstate medical director for Planned Parenthood of Greater New York and an OBGYN. McLeod says state bans in place around the country are proving to be disastrous, exacerbating a shortage of medical providers.
I'm from Texas, and I very consciously chose not to train in Texas and not to return to Texas because I can't do my job. I would go to jail, even though my family's there. And I care very deeply about those communities, but I can't imagine going back to a place where I could be prosecuted for providing the best and most comprehensive medical care that there is.
Abortion doula Tammy Stort says the medication allows pregnant people to make a choice that fits their current situation. The Planned Parenthood volunteer says reasons to terminate a pregnancy are multi-pronged.
We need to be talking about the living wage, the child care gap. We need to be telling our people that, yes, we should be building our villages, but the village is no longer free.
Recently, France became the only country in the world to amend its constitution reserve a woman's choice to receive an abortion. Shelley Hegan, the president and CEO of Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood, says America should follow suit. First, New Yorkers will consider a constitutional amendment on the fall ballot.
We hope to pass the Equal Rights Amendment to protect abortion access in New York in perpetuity, and it seems outrageous to say, but there should be a constitutional amendment allowing for access to abortion or somehow limiting the role government plays in medication or in healthcare.
For their part, abortion opponents have cheered the Dobbs decision, and with states setting their own rules, envisioned a future congressional vote on a nationwide ban. Lori Keough is an abortion opponent with New York State Right to Life. She says if the Supreme Court rules to ban the mailing of mifepristone, it's not limiting access. It's protecting the health and safety of women.
We're not checking her. So we're not checking her in person to make sure that this drug is safe at this particular point in her pregnancy so that we can confirm the time of her pregnancy. We're not seeing her and going through and counseling her and then not having anyone in person with her.
Tanco says this divided Congress has been a difficult one to get progressive policies through. Governor Kathy Hochul, a Democrat, said she is continuing her commitment to provide access to mifepristone, which is made by New York-based Danco Laboratories.
It's one thing to provide abortion services, but if they outlaw the distribution of mifepristone as a result of the Supreme Court decision, which we'll hear about in June, if they go that far, then what options do I have? I have 150,000 doses stockpiled, but it should not come to this.
Samantha Simmons, WAMC News, Albany.
Thanks for listening to this week's 51%. 51% is a national production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany, New York. It's produced and hosted by me, Jesse King. Our associate producer is Jody Cowan, and our theme is Lolita by the Albany-based artist Girl Blue. Just a reminder that you can listen to 51% anytime at wamcpodcast.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can stay in the loop on all of WAMC's shows by signing up for our weekly newsletter, Airwaves, at wamc.org. We hope you'll join us next week. Until then, I'm Jesse King from 51%.
I was every single girl, I was nobody else, I was so sure of myself. I was 15 and a half, he was a hollow laugh. And I lost my cool somewhere along the way. The night air down the hallway, I had to learn how to look away. I lost my cool.